SBS music station is coming.
SBS Pop Euro.
Filled with Eurovision hits non-stop.
You want more?
Tune in from the 1st of May.
On DAB Radio, online.
The SBS Audio app.
And SBS On Demand.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 15th of April 2026. It's a day where the Australian share market rose, but only just. The ASX 200 up 0.1%. We'll have the details with Scott Phillips from The Motley Fool in a few moments. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. We go into more detail of the top consumer finance and market news stories covered during On The Money on SBS World News. But first, Virgin Australia will be reducing flights and increasing airfares to offset rising fuel costs. It will see domestic services scaled back on routes where the demand is weaker, representing a cut of around 1%. At the moment, fuel makes up around 21% of the airline's total expenses behind labour and airport charges, and the airline says it's expected to spend an extra $30 to $40 million on fuel for the rest of the year, which has been limited because of hedging. Yesterday, Qantas said its fuel bill will be around $800 million more than expected in the second half. It announced capacity cuts and cancelled some flights as a result. To find out more about what all these changes mean for travellers and the sector more broadly, Phoebe Dees spoke with Ellis Taylor, an aviation analyst from Cirium.
Look, in the short term, it doesn't look like there's going to be much change. These are really just sort of, I guess, trims to the schedule. They're largely on routes where there's multiple flights a day sort of being collapsed down into only a few. Unfortunately, it does mean that there are some routes such as the Adelaide-Mount Gambier, which is coming off, and some ones where things are going to more of a seasonal basis. So from a customer perspective, there's not going to be a lot. But what we will notice in the coming months is that airfares are going to rise. In fact, they have already been rising, and really that trend will start to continue. Both Qantas and Virgin have talked about that their unit revenue, so the revenue they get, I guess, as a proxy of the ticket prices, is expected to go up at the same time they bring this capacity down. And a lot of that's just simple economics. They're taking supply out of the system, and with demand sort of being pretty resilient, they're sort of expecting that revenue is going to go up, which means that airfares are going to go up. So I expect that that'll be something that we'll be seeing really through the next few months and likely towards the end of the year as well.
Yeah, and with how, airlines are managing their budgets in terms of looking ahead and seeing fuel prices increasing and doesn't seem like a let up there, Qantas has projected $800 million plus in extra expenditure on fuel. Virgin, however, is about $30 to $40 million in their update today. So why is there such a big difference? And then what are you making of their hedging policies? Like, is that playing a part in this?
Yeah, so really Virgin's much smaller increase comes down to the fact that they had a lot of their hedging was still in what's called the crack spread. So that's the refining margin to go from crude oil into jet fuel. They had a lot of that hedge there, as well as crude hedging as well. So really what's happened in the global aviation industry is that crack spread has gone from, it used to be about US$20 a barrel to over US$120 a barrel. So that is elevated quite a lot. Virgin has been fortunate that they've had a lot of their hedging has been into that that crack spread, so they've been able to control that cost. Qantas had their hedging, as I understand it, solely in crude, so they've had to bear that additional refining margin. And we're seeing a number of airlines around the world are in the same boat there, where some airlines were completely unhedged and are having to wear those additional fuel costs, and they're trying to recoup that through higher ticket prices. But other ones have been hedged in crude and are still sort of having to go there. So that, of course, is all well and good, and that only runs to a certain point, however. And we've sort of seen that Virgin today has they've got crude hedges into the second half, but the jet fuel side of that has come down dramatically. I think it's only about 17%. So it is one of these things of hedging is a strategy to try and lock in pricing, and that doesn't always go favourably. It also leaves the airlines exposed if the fuel price comes down. And whilst they might still be able to take advantage of a reduction in the spot price of fuel, they then still have to mark that against their profits when it comes to the financial results. So I think at this stage, I mean, Virgin have been fortunate with the hedging that they've done. Qantas, obviously, having some hedging is better than none, but they've sort of felt the impact. But having said that, Qantas is probably more able to absorb that impact and pass that onto consumers as well. So, from an investor perspective, Virgin, I guess, sort of wins this round, but longer term, I think it's a pretty tight race between them. Because ultimately, any hedging that any airline does now is going to be at a much higher oil price and a much higher jet fuel price. And so that potentially sets a risk up further down the track.
But how do you make how these airlines are responding to this crisis?
Look, I think it's a very measured response at the moment. They are obviously dealing with quite a big spike, which has come on very quickly in the fuel price. And so they're pulling the levers that they can, which is around airfares, and with that, the capacity that they've got at the market. And what we've seen so far is just sort of small trims to try and control some of that capacity. We haven't seen them yet pulling large amounts of flights out from the system. And that says to me that demand is expected to be resilient, that people are still purchasing air tickets, and they expect that they'll be able to purchase them at a higher fare. So I think really for the moment, that sort of shows that things are well. What I'm really interested in to see how that situation continues on into the rest of the year. I suspect if we start to see that oil prices are having a deeper impact in the economy, that we might see particularly small businesses and, leisure travelers and so on might start to reconsider their need to travel. And at that point, airlines will still try and adjust their capacity to match that demand. But if we see a real downfall in that, a real downturn, even if we see an economic downturn in the worst case scenarios, then that's going to be something that'll really lead to, I guess, more drastic measures by the airlines to respond to that.
How likely are these drastic measures and what would that look like?
Yeah, so I think for the next 3 months, we're kind of at a stage where things are locked in. A lot of tickets have been sold for those flights already. And there'll be probably, again, just some adjustments here and there, maybe on sort of a fortnightly to a monthly basis. And a lot of that will come down to, possibly airlines having to rebook passengers that are on flights that they might have to pull. But I think beyond that, it's going to be interesting to see what the big moves are. And I suspect we will start to see capacity changes in aggregate of about sort of maybe a further 5% or so. Anything beyond that really, I think, becomes a bit more drastic. And that's where the airlines will sort of have to take a really strong look at their networks and decide, are there routes that we'll have to exit entirely? Are there ones where we'll have to move to using smaller aircraft rather than bigger ones? And then also how they manage the demand more dynamically. Do some airlines want to put more capacity onto international markets? Or alternatively, is the international market going to feel the biggest hit because they do use a lot more fuel to fly internationally? So there's a few different things that will play out here. But I think what we will see is that probably more on a gradual basis, airfares will continue to rise over the next months. And then from there, I think it'll come down to what's the call look like for the second half of the year? And if demand is going down, then we might start to see some routes start to be suspended.
And then what's your advice to people looking to fly for a European summer?
So I think if you're going for a European summer and you've got an attractive airfare on hold, I'd grab it now. At this stage, there seems to be a lot of people who are traveling through Asia, who might have previously gone through the Middle East. And so the availability of cheap airfares going via Asia to Europe is quite constrained at the moment. Similarly, going through, on some of the non-stop services or via Singapore. We're starting to see some of the Chinese airlines are really playing in that market, taking people through hubs like Shanghai and Beijing. And even the US airlines, even though it's a lot more inconvenient to go through the US. So if you're after a European holiday, and I would say go for it now, do bear in mind that there may be some adjustments that will happen with that. So it's always best to make sure that you've got some buffer in your timeline to be able to move there should an airline potentially cut a flight or so on. There's no signs of that as yet, but as
Out of the ABS today and overseas arrivals and departures, I drilled down into the detail and found that for the very first time, these official numbers revealed Japan has overtaken Indonesia as Australia's second most popular tourist destination. New Zealand's the first. There were a couple of instances at the peak of the pandemic when borders were virtually closed where there were more people being let into Japan than Indonesia, but those numbers were negligible. So in February, just over 103,000 Aussie residents return from Japan from a short-term trip. That compares with 101,000 from Indonesia. Now, one of the big attractions is a positive exchange rate. One Australian dollar at the moment is buying around 113 Japanese yen. Just before the pandemic, it was around 75. So that's a 50% increase since then.
Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I've give up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, let's go to the markets now. The Australian share market opened strongly but lost much of those gains throughout the afternoon. The ASX 200 closing up 0.1%. Tech stocks did best along with healthcare, although the banks lost ground. Energy producers fell, and that's as the oil price declined another 3.5% compared with the ASX market close yesterday at around 94 US. For more on the day's market action, I spoke with Scott Phillips, the Chief Investment Officer at the Motley Fund. Uncertainty. So are investors too optimistic?
Oh, Ricardo, probably yes. I'm optimistic by nature, mate. And I love being an optimist in a room full of pessimists, right? I love being the guy who's like, things will get better. I can invest on that basis. When everybody else is ultra optimistic, I look around and go, I'd like to be that optimistic, but I can't quite bring myself to. Oh, look, the future is going to be very bright. The near-term future, though, that is probably a very different story. I don't know what happens next. No one else does, but it doesn't seem like there is much risk priced into shares right now.
What about that oil price? We've seen it ease back from those really high inflation concerns.
Super great, mate. And hopefully it continues. But like with the general market, I wonder and worry about the optimism there. The market is betting this gets resolved sooner rather than later. The price went from 67 a barrel to about 117, give or take. It's pretty much come back halfway, which is really impressive and really welcome. Is it enough? Is it permanent? I don't know. I'd love to believe so. To your point, though, yes, very good for inflation. Doesn't fix economic growth issues at this stage because the oil still isn't flowing. So the price is a guess about future volumes, about future impacts. We're yet to see the physical movement. That's what the economy needs so we can say the coast is finally clear.
Speaking of oil, we've heard from the airlines in recent days, Qantas cutting capacity and warning of higher fuel costs. Similar news out of Virgin Australia today, although its fuel bill isn't as large. It is lifting prices, though. What do you make of the way the airlines are operating in this environment?
Are you asking me to say they are colluding, Ricardo? I'm not going to say that. What I will say is that mutual self-interest is the friend of profitability. So both of them making what is very, very rational self-interested decisions. It's perfect for each airline. And as long as they both do the same thing, game theory says they'll both be okay. Putting up prices, no-brainer. Cutting services, effectively pushing us onto higher occupancy flights, absolute no-brainer. And having the oil price is an excuse to do something. It's real, but it's also an excuse to do so. Very, very welcome for the airlines. Yeah, look, the other thing, by the way, these fuel prices are up, but also hedged. So there is worse to come if the oil price doesn't fall back again. Rolling forward 6 and 12 months, they're not going to have hedging contracts out far enough. So we're going to see continued increases to jet fuel prices and hits to Virgin and Qantas' profitability unless and until the oil price itself starts to fall.
And so finally, what are you telling your clients right now and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Yeah, stay long term. Don't try, as much as we just talked about it, don't try and read the short term. Don't bet based on the short term. Long term, quality businesses will win. We will get through this. We'll look back at this and say, however long it lasted, it's gone now. It got resolved. We have some sort of new normal. Is it exactly the price before the war? Probably not. Is it close-ish? Yeah, probably, because things will get resolved one way or the other. So the key here is not to overreact to the short term and to look to the long term. Where are you looking then? By definition, companies that have long-term quality business models that aren't long-term impacted by this can get through the short term. So be careful of unprofitable businesses or businesses that are highly indebted or highly reliant on the oil price. But think long term. If the business is good in 5 years, if it's better in 5 years than today, And today the shares are available. Go and buy them. As you started by saying, though, the market's back to kind of almost those pre-war highs. So the opportunities are evaporating, unfortunately, right in front of our eyes.
That's Scott Phillips there, the Chief Investment Officer at The Motley Fool, and he wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Don't forget, if you like it, give it a like and a review and subscribe wherever you're streaming this from. And don't forget, you can watch On The Money during the 6:30 weekday edition of SBS World News on SBS. The podcast returns tomorrow. It drops after the market close every weekday, and I'll catch you then.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.